This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Weather events and disasters can be ferocious. Tornadoes, earthquakes, tsunamis, these sudden forces strike quickly and leave destruction in their wake. In December of 1952, London, England was struck by a much more quiet calamity, a heavy blanket of smog so thick that thousands died. In a city known for pea soupers, the event came to be known as the Great Smog and was recently remembered on the Netflix series The Crown.
Good morning. The time is 8 o'clock on the 8th of December, and here is the news. The choking, eye-watering fog, which has already caused 2 days of chaos across the capital, has worsened overnight. The great coal-burning electricity stations in Battersea and Fulham have attempted to reduce emissions of poisonous sulfur dioxide from their chimneys, but we've been told that it is unlikely they will be able to make any significant change to the air quality. The government is expected to make a statement later today.
Dr. Christine Corton is author of London Fog, The Biography, and joins us now to talk about the Great Smog. Christine, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Hi, Virginia. Thanks for inviting me.
So the fog is so dense, locals call them pea soupers. How thick does it get?
Well, it got so thick that you could literally not see your hand in front of your face. You certainly couldn't see your feet when you were standing up. I mean, during the 19th century, when many of these fogs took place, people would literally just walk into the Thames because they couldn't actually see the drop into the Thames. So they would drown. So it was pretty blinding.
Set the scene for us. What are the conditions that led to this great smog in 1952, and why so especially dangerous?
Well, of course, it's to do with coal burning. I mean, as the Industrial Revolution took off, more coal was burnt in both industry and in the domestic homes. And this with a natural fog problem that London has. It's in a basin. It's surrounded, it had a river running through it. It's surrounded by fairly moist marshlands, and certainly was during the 19th century. It has a natural fog problem. But then when you mix it with this rather lethal cocktail of coal smoke coming from chimneys, especially coal smoke that hadn't quite been combusted properly. So it was filled with large particulates that would get into the air, mix with the cold, foggy air. It would get compressed down into these very narrow streets of London and become lethal.
You mentioned people walking into the Thames. How did people die in this fog?
Well, as I say, I mean, traffic accidents. I mean, you could be run over by a horse and carriage because you literally could not see it coming. And of course, the fog would muffle sound, so you couldn't even hear a horse and carriage coming. In the 20th century, when cars became more prevalent, you were very likely to be run over by a car. You literally could not see the car coming. You couldn't hear it coming. And of course, cars couldn't see their way on the road, so they might end up on a pavement, going into a front garden. There were many, many accidents, as well as, of course, breathing it in. And if you had vulnerable lung diseases, asthma, emphysema, if you were very young or very elderly, the fog could literally kill you within a couple of days.
What about the infrastructure of London? How did it affect how the city ran, other than, you know, people getting hurt?
Well, traffic couldn't actually run properly. So it stopped in the later 20th century. It stopped all aircraft travel. Certainly the 1952 fog literally closed London Airport, as it was called then. Cars were fairly useless. Buses would try to continue a normal service but couldn't, and would literally have to limp back to the bus station, not to be used again until the fog cleared up. So people couldn't get into work, and if people had to get into work, many of them would have to actually walk. There is, in fact, in the 1952 smog, stories of school children, and I find this amazing, school children literally being sent out in the fog to go to school. Parents would just wrap a scarf around their nose and a mouth. They'd go to school, and it would thicken up so much that they would have to then spend the night at school.
And because of the geography, the landscape of London, the fog was worse in the east. Why does that matter?
Well, it was worse in the East kind of during the 19th century. I think during the 20th century, it got increasingly worse over the whole of London, and it became a whole London problem. The fact is that the East End of London became the poorer part of London, partly because of wind direction. So all the smoke from the West End would travel to the East and hang over the East. And also the East End of London had a lot of industry, a lot of smoky industry, which had been banned from the West End of London. In the 18th century, when these big estates were starting to be built, like the Grosvenor Estates, etc., many of the developers would actually forbid smoky industries to site themselves in the West End. So this meant that there was a natural progression of these very smoky industries moving to the East End of London. So that's really why the East End of London becomes a much poorer part of London.
There are stories about upticks in crime. There are stories about people having to walk to the hospital because their ambulances couldn't run. Tell us some of those other stories that you found about the Great Smog. And where did you find them? Newspapers?
Well, newspapers, all kinds of sources, journals, in literature. Lots of authors, of course, write about smog in their works of fiction. And, of course, artists were painting these foggy outbreaks. But other stories, well, I think we should think about the animal life. In 1873, there was a major fog outbreak. It lasted 5 days. And Smithfield Cattle Market happened to be operating at the same time, Smithfield Cattle Show. And so there were all these highly prized cattle who literally could not breathe. They were so highly bred that they couldn't actually breathe the air around them because it was so polluted. And over 90 of them either died, suffocated, or had to be put down because they were panting so piteously. Ironically, the cheaper cattle that was also on show, because they weren't so well bred, could cope with it much more. And also there was a rumour that because their bedding wasn't changed nearly as frequently, that the urine in the bedding would actually disinfect the air around them. And this actually happened in the 1952 smog as well, to a lesser extent, but the Smithfield Cattle Show got held in December, virtually at the same time, and again it was affected. Birds could not actually find a place to land, so they would fly around for hours until they literally fell exhausted in front of a car. In fact, there's a picture in my book of a swan that has done that. It's tried to find a place to land, couldn't, and then just fallen out of the sky. Plant life also suffered. So if you have a major smog, lots of the kind of more exotic plants, their leaves would fall off, the flowers would drop off, they would die. It's one of the reasons why the plane tree is so popular in London, because it was resistant to smoke. And they found this out in the 18th century, so they put lots of plane trees all over London. It's resistant because its bark peels off regularly, so the smoke could not go through to the actual root of the tree. And the leaves are very glossy, so if the smog fell on the leaf, it would actually be rained off and couldn't burn through the leaf.
My guest is Christine Corton. She's author of London Fog, the biography, and she's telling us about the Great Smog of 1952. It was in December in London. It was recently depicted in the Netflix television series The Crown. Now, Christine, I know you haven't seen The Crown, but in the series, the British Prime Minister Winston Churchill, who is played by John Lithgow, isn't particularly concerned, even seems a little dismissive of the smog. And another politician who had a little warning about it was using it for political advantage. Was that true?
Well, it's not true of the specific people. I mean, Churchill, I think they're using Churchill because that's the figure most people would know. In fact, Harold Macmillan was the housing minister at the time and the main minister in charge of infrastructure around the 1952 smog. He was very cynical. He felt that people should just cope with it. He actually said, anyone would think, when he got a lot of criticism, anyone would think that I'd created the fog. You know, it was here before I was around. And he also, he did not want to deal with it because in order to use more smokeless fuel, you have to have high quality coal, because you have to produce more smokeless fuel for people to use. And we were actually exporting a lot of our high quality coal to Europe, and so he didn't want to lose that money coming in. So I think it's slightly unfair on Churchill, actually. I think he's being used to view this whole government cynicism about this 1952 smog. I think many politicians during the 19th century and 20th century try to introduce legislation, and every time it got passed through Parliament, it was weakened by industrial interests and then by an unwillingness of the government to interfere in the householders' right to burn in their hearth what they wanted to burn. There was a series of attempts to introduce a Clean Air Act, which of course culminated in the 1956 Clean Air Act, which finally became law.
So the severity of this finally convinced them to do something about reform.
Well, I don't think, of course it was severe. It was one of the severest episodes. But I think it was more to do with the fact that it was post-Second World War. And I think people had had enough. They said, we haven't fought a war in order to have a capital city that is shrouded in darkness for many months of the year. We want a cleaner city. And I think it was actually the momentum of newspaper articles condemning the air, condemning the government. There were banners across newspapers saying, you are poisoning us, what are you going to do about it? As well as public disapproval of government apathy.
Well, the great smog aside, you also write about how London's famous fog, it really is part of the city's character. It's been depicted in paintings and novels. Do you find there some beauty in the fog?
Well, certainly artists like Monet and Whistler find a lot of beauty in it. You have to remember it wasn't just purely black. Colours could be seen in it, green, yellow, purple, certainly the colours that Monet picks out. I mean, he did a series, painted over 100 paintings of London fog, of which about 35, 36 are around. People actually saw it in a much less negative light than we perhaps would view it. They saw it as a symbol of success. If you've got foggy, smoky London, you've actually got successful industries pumping out smoke, but also providing employment. It also means you can afford coal on your fire, which actually through much of the 19th, early 20th century, that was your only means of heating your house or cooking your food, etc. People made jokes about it. They accepted it. And I think, you know, there was, even in 1952, there was a bit of a blitz spirit. We must carry on. But I think it had reached a point where people just said, no, we've got to now clean up our air.
Well, now coal burning is one of the big contributors to air pollution in China. And reportedly, Beijing is even launching a new smog police, which will crack down on big polluters. Has Beijing inherited London's smog problem?
Well, I think both China and India, actually, which is another country that suffers from very bad air pollution, they're going through their own industrial development, and just as we did in the 19th and 20th century. I wouldn't criticise them for it. I think they're trying their very best to clean up the air. It's a difficult problem because, of course, economically, it's not something that you can clear up within a week or a year. You have to build new factories. You have to encourage people to use perhaps more expensive forms of energy. Coal is cheap. Is very cheap in China, which is why it's used. Gas and electricity are much more expensive. So governments have to deal with it. But I wouldn't criticise China. We polluted the air in the 19th and 20th century. They now have to find their own solutions.
Dr. Christine Corton, author of London Fog, the biography. Thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
You can read more about her book and about the Great Smog and find some photographs at wordofmouthradio.org. I We've got a quick update on that story. London's famous or infamous pea supers may be a thing of the past, but that doesn't mean the pollution is gone. Not long after we recorded our conversation with Christine Corton, we read that parts of London have exceeded the city's smog limit for 2017. And that happened in just the first 5 days of this year. The source of the smog is not exactly the same as it was back in those heavy coal-burning days. The problem today is nitrogen dioxide levels, which come mainly from diesel vehicles. Levels are measured hourly and are allowed to exceed 200 micrograms per cubic meter only 18 times a year. That is the goal anyway. Sounds like there's still a long way to go.